1 year ago, Aurora Mardiganian was just 14, a bright-eyed Armenian girl in a well-respected Christian family. She wore long skirts. She bowed her head during prayers. She spoke softly, listened carefully, and lived a simple, mostly peaceful life. But that life was gone. Her father and brother, taken away by Ottoman soldiers, never returned. Her sisters, her mother, her aunts, gone, one by one. Each loss carved a deeper hole inside her. Each death was a reminder that she was not meant to survive. And yet she had. After months of starvation, assault, and forced marches through brutal Syrian desert, Aurora had escaped. A Kurdish couple had taken her and her toddler cousin in, shielding them from the nightmare outside. For the first time in months, she had a pillow and a blanket, a roof, a quiet night without screaming. But peace came with a choice. She had heard about a monastery, Armenians living there who had broken free, who were hiding, organizing, even preparing to fight back. And something in her heart told her she had to find them, even if it meant losing safety all over again. I'm Loralee Siemens, and this is a Church History Podcast. Welcome back to the Church History Podcast. I'm your host, Loralee Siemens. Before we begin, I need to speak directly to the families with younger listeners who are part of our podcasting community. I am very thankful that you're here, and I love knowing that young people are engaging with church history through these stories. But I need to give a warning. This episode deals with some very heavy and traumatic topics, including violence, slavery, and death. That's because I'm telling the story of a young girl who lived through the Armenian Genocide. And while I'm not going to go into graphic detail, the nature of the story is dark and intense. If you're a parent, I encourage you to listen to this episode first, and then decide whether it's appropriate for your child. Some parts could be upsetting, and I want to make sure you feel comfortable and prepared. I also want to honor these stories with both truth and compassion. If you haven't listened to part one of Aurora's story, I encourage you to go back and start there. Before continuing with today's episode, you're going to learn about her family, her faith, and the beginning of the nightmare that changed her life forever. You'll find a link to part one in the show notes. Aurora sat in the corner of the small Kurdish home. The toddler was sleeping beside her. The oil lamp was casting shadows on the walls, and she stared at him. His chest was rising and falling in the steady rhythm as he slept. She had thought about it for hours. This Kurdish couple was so kind, kinder than anyone she'd known since her world had ended. They had fed the child, washed him, and even taught him how to laugh again. And now Aurora had a choice. She could stay with him or leave him behind to chase the rumor, the whisper of Armenians, free and hiding in the hills in a monastery. In the early hours before dawn, she kissed his forehead, then pulled her shawl over her shoulders and stepped out into the cold. She traveled by night, her feet silent against the stones, and her body wrapped in the darkness. During the day, she would curl under shrubs or wedge herself between cracks in the rocks and wait for the sun and the soldiers. And then, once the day was gone and under the cover of night, she would head out once again. And then, one night, she saw it, finally, the building perched on the hillside, the monastery. She crept to the door, her heart pounding. And then she knocked. The door opened and she stepped inside. And then she froze. Dozens of Armenians, men, women, even children, they stood there. They were thin. A lot of them had scars and bruises, but they were alive. And when they saw her, one ran, opened her arms, and pulled her into a full embrace. For the first time in months, with all the trauma that she had gone through, Aurora cried. She was home. In the quiet days that followed, Aurora began to feel something she hadn't dared to feel in a long time. She felt normal. She shared meals with other Armenians. She even occasionally laughed. And she began, slowly, to sleep through the night. And most importantly, she met an amazing friend. Her name was Arusiako. Like Aurora, she also had survived the desert, the death marches, and the unrelenting violence and sexual attacks. They didn't need to explain their pain to each other. There was understanding in every glance, and even the silence between them. The two girls clung to another, not just for comfort, but for strength. Together, they worked sweeping the monastery floors, they helped serve meals, and they began to think and even dream about what life would be like after the war. They were among other survivors, and here, Aurora began to find pieces of herself again. She didn't see herself as a refugee or a slave. She was no longer just a girl who ran. She was one of many, and she belonged. For 2 precious weeks, the monastery was a fragile sanctuary. It felt like those walls had wrapped their arms around her to keep her safe. But peace, as she had learned throughout the last year, never lingers long. And one night, in the middle of the night, a sound ripped through the silence. There was shouting. Voices. They were foreign. They were demanding. And then there was pounding fists against the wooden door. Aurora shut upright. The nightmare had returned. Outside the monastery gates, the shouting grew louder, angry and wild. It was Chechen bandits. Aurora had heard of them. These were mercenaries. They had no loyalty to any country, except, of course, loyalty to violence. They were known collaborators of the Ottoman soldiers. They often had swept through the camps during the marches. When they swept through, it was like wolves. They just took what they wanted. Inside the chapel, the monks, those kind men who had opened their doors to the broken, worked desperately to hold the door shut. They stacked furniture. They braced planks of wood. They prayed, but the doors were old, and they splintered. With the final crash, the doors burst open. The bandits poured in like a flood. They had swords drawn, and they laughed as they committed violence. Aurora grabbed Arusiko's hand and backed into the shadows. But really, there was nowhere to run. There was no safe room. There's no hidden tunnels. They ran into the chapel and found it filled with other terrified women. One of the monks stepped forward and raised his arms in peace. The Chechen bandits struck him down without a word. And then the others followed. One by one, they killed each of the monks. Aurora watched as the men who had given her sanctuary were slaughtered. And then the bandits turned to the women. They walked along them like it was a market, pointing, shouting, grabbing. "This one's mine," one sneered. "No, I saw her first," barked another, as they began arguing and fighting over the women. Aurora held on to Arusiako as tight as she could, knowing the moment would come when someone was going to tear them apart. When the looting ended, the choosing began. The bandits barked orders. They pulled the girls and made them force into a straight line. The line stretched across the blood-stained chapel floor, around the bodies of the monks that lay scattered around them. And that is when the true horror began. One by one, the bandits walked the line. They eyed each girl like livestock at a market. They didn't ask for names. They didn't care who the girls were, what they had survived, what they had lost. They didn't even care if they came from wealthy families. They simply looked at their bodies. The girls who weren't deemed beauty enough, who were too thin, too bruised, too plain, were pulled out of the line and executed on the spot. Aurora stood frozen beside her friend, her heart pounding in her ears. She gripped her friend's hand so tightly that her knuckles began to turn white. The guards were coming closer, shouting, laughing, randomly killing some, pulling others aside. And then they stopped in front of them. One of the bandits pointed at Aurora. "This one," he said. "She's pretty. She lives." Then he turned to Aruska. "Not her." Aruska felt the hand she was holding onto pulled away from hers. She screamed. She reached, but the two bandits held her back. Then they shot Aruska. That day, of all the Armenian refugees who had found peace in the monastery, only 27 were spared. 27 women who'd be forced into sex slavery. The rest were shot and killed. And then those 27 were forced to march again. The surviving girls were dragged from the monastery, heads down, feet blistered and torn, into yet another camp, another prison, another hell. This one was colder, dirtier, and louder. Here, chaos ruled. Nobody was in charge. Armed men came and went. Girls were treated like property. They were bartered for. They were slapped. They were shoved. Often forgotten and only remembered when somebody wanted something for them. They were sex slaves and they had only one purpose. Every day for Aurora was a fight to stay unseen, to not be noticed. Aurora learned how to make herself small, how to fold her body inward, how to listen for danger before it arrived. But no amount of hiding could keep her safe forever. One night, a soldier came after her. He was drunk and he was slurring his words, and his eyes were wild. And then those wild eyes focused on her. He grabbed her, dragged her to a room, and she knew the plan he had for her. She bolted and began running, ducking into corridors of shadows and broken stone. She slipped from room to room and then another, with the man chasing her. And then she saw it, on a table, half buried under a rug, gleaming and sharp, a knife. Her breath caught. She hadn't held a weapon since her father's rifle had hung over the fireplace back home, and that had been a completely different life. But her hand moved on instinct. She grabbed the knife and hid it under her clothes just as the soldier's footsteps closed in. He found her in a small storage room and slammed the door behind him. He was determined to get what he had come for. He grabbed her and pinned her arms down. But she was no longer the girl who marched through the desert. She was Aurora Mardiganian. And at that moment, she decided she was a warrior, and she fought back. The blade flashed, one strike, then another, then another. The soldier collapsed at her feet. Later in her writings, Aurora would remember that moment and write this. I know God guided my hand, for I am sure I killed him. He fell at my feet. And for the first time, Aurora stood over the body of a man who had tried to destroy her. But he was dead. And she was alive and free. Aurora didn't wait. As soon as the soldier collapsed, she turned and ran out of the room, down the corridor, through the broken doors of the prison compound and into the night. Her feet slapped on the dirt road. Her breath came in sharp gasps. Her heart thundered louder than her footsteps. She reached the street and froze, scanning in every direction. There was darkness, and she was trying to see anything. And then for a moment, she thought she was alone, and then a movement, a figure, a woman. She could tell she was Turkish by her dress. She was standing in the shadows and watching Aurora with wide eyes. Aurora's hand went instinctively to the knife, still held in her clothes. She was ready to fight and to die, but she would not be taken again. The woman raised her hands, slowly, then stepped back and motioned. "Come with me." Something in her expression, how she was gentle and urgent, told Aurora she could trust her. So she followed, through a narrow alley, down a rusted archway, into a quiet courtyard. The woman shut the gate behind them and turned to Aurora with tears in her eyes. "I'm sorry," she said. "I'm so sorry for what has been done to your people." She pulled Aurora into a tight embrace, and the warmth of the hug stunned Aurora. That night, the woman brought bread, olives, and cool water. She gave Aurora a blanket to let her hide in the quiet of the courtyard wall. And just before dawn, she returned with a small cloth pouch and inside 3 coins. She pressed it into Aurora's hand and whispered quickly, "You need to go out the north gate, not the south. Everyone taken through the south is killed, but those taken through the north, some live. Hide in the Kajari Hills. It's a mile outside the city. Stay hidden until morning. If you see Arminians passing through those rocks and not being shot, then go." And then she kissed Aurora on the forehead and said, "God be with you." And then opened the gate. Aurora stepped out into the darkness, once again running towards hope. Aurora did exactly as a Turkish woman had told her. She crept through the city's shadows, keeping her head low, her steps quiet. The north gate loomed ahead, and there was soldiers. The gate was being guarded by soldiers. Aurora sat quietly and waited. And then there was a shift in their attention. They were distracted just for a second, and Aurora slipped through. She ran until the buildings turned into hills, and then open wilderness beyond. And then, just as she'd been told, she found the Kajari rocks. These were jagged stones rising out of the earth, and she crawled beneath them. Her body was aching, and her mind raced. She lay there quietly, hidden. She stayed there until morning. In the morning, Aurora stood and cautiously stepped out into the road, hoping she'd be able to travel unnoticed. She should have waited until night, because then a patrol, an Ottoman police officer. Aurora froze, and their eyes met. She screamed, not necessarily out of fear, but rage, grief, despair. Something in her just rose up, and she screamed. They had seen her, and she knew. She couldn't be taken again, not back to another camp, not to be sold, not to be touched again. She reached for the knife at her waist and held it in her shaking hands, and she prayed. Dear God, shall I just come now to you, or do I wait until you call? There was silence, but somehow she knew. She dropped the knife because she felt the Holy Spirit say, God always says, choose life. Aurora stood there, and she let herself stand tall. She would be undefeated. The police grabbed her, they bound her arms, and marched her right back to the very place she had fled. By nightfall, she was in the center of the crowded camp once more, once again lined up like property, put up for sale again. This time, her buyer was a man of power, a wealthy Ottoman governor from her own home province. Aurora recognized the dialect he spoke and the crest on his clothing. She even remembered the name of his estate. He was from the world she had once lived in, the world she felt no longer existed. This man had been one of the Muslims that had lived in her hometown. And she was being delivered to his compound. At that moment, something inside her shifted. She had been bought again, but this time she made a vow. She would live, but never as a slave. She would find the others, the other Armenians scattered across the empire, hidden in valleys and villages and deserts. She would find them. Even if it meant crawling through caves, even if she had to starve in the wilderness, even if she ended up being torn apart by wild animals, but she would never bow, not to a man, not to fear, and never to Islam. Aurora whispered her vows. I will never deny Christ. I will never worship Muhammad, not even if it saves my life. And that decision gave her strength. And within hours of entering the governor's mansion, she found her chance, slipped through the courtyard, scrambled over a crumbling wall, and vanished into the night, and didn't look back. This time she had a new destination, home. Because now she was in her hometown. She wanted to find her family home, to see what remained, to face the ruins and the truth. The path to home was long and winding, and most of the homes were empty. These had been the homes of her friends. Now there was just a quiet stillness. The homes were hollow. The streets were empty. It had been 1 year since she'd been forced to leave, yet it felt like a lifetime. She stepped into her family's house. The walls were already crumbling. Dust was thick on every surface. But the memories were still there, the happy life she had once known. In a small alcove beneath a loose board, she found what she was looking for, her father's rifle. She held it in her trembling hands. She was about to leave when something else on the wall caught her eye, a photograph. Faded, even curled on the edges, it was her family. She looked at her family, and then in the very back of the portrait was her oldest brother, Vaughn. Vaughn had left and moved away when Aurora was quite young. She hardly even remembered him. He had actually left for America. And she wondered if Vaughn knew. Did he have any idea what had happened? That their parents were dead, their brothers and sisters gone, and that she was left alone here. She stared at his face and then tucked the photo into her clothes and turned to go. Then she heard it, a voice. It was familiar. She spun around. It was the shepherd, the same one who had come to their house a year ago with a warning. He had not forgotten her. He told her news. Her uncle, Ghazar, was still alive. He was hiding in the mountains with a group of Armenian refugees. A band of Kurds was sheltering them, men who allowed themselves to stay in exchange for their labor. It was still slavery, but at least they were alive. Without hesitation, Aurora set off. When she found the hidden camp, her breath caught in her throat. There was her uncle. He was weak and thin, but he was alive. She ran to him. For the first time in what felt like forever, she had family again. Although she had to tell her uncle what had happened to his wife and children, and that his son was alive, being cared for by a kind family who were hiding him. She stayed and worked in the fields besides the others. She harvested the little things that she could. She cared for her uncle and nursed him and whispered stories to lift his spirits. And at night, he told her stories in return about a place called America, a land where Armenians could live freely, worship openly, speak without fear, a land of opportunity, a land of safety. And as he told her those stories, Aurora began to dream, a dream that maybe, just maybe, her journey wasn't over yet. Before she left the mountain refuge, Aurora took her father's rifle, the one she had recovered from the ruined home, and gave it to her uncle. "You're going to need this more than I will," she said. And then she turned to go. Her and six others, seven in total, Armenians, began to walk. They would walk to Russia. They walked together. Their path took them through some dangerous terrain and even some enemy-patrolled territory. But they were going to walk to freedom. As always, they walked at night, and during the day, they hid in caves and under shrubs. They were always hungry and full of fear. One evening, they encountered a Kurdish man. He listened to their stories carefully, and then he said, "There's a river you must cross. You won't make it on foot. I'll send my relatives. They'll come with horses, and they will help." Trusting him was a risk, but they decided they would trust him. So they waited there, and to their amazement, the next day, his relatives arrived. They were Kurdish men, but they had kind eyes, and they carried bread, dried fruit, and even water in containers for them. They helped the group mount on horses, and they guided them down the river path. It was always these small acts of kindness that helped Aurora remember that the world wasn't completely evil. There, on the horseback, she crossed the river. As she reached the canyon outside of Russia, she spotted something none of them expected. Russian soldiers. The Tsar's army had pushed into Ottoman territory and gained ground in the war. Aurora's heart pounded. Would the Russians be their enemies too? She stepped forward and spoke in broken Russian. Her parents, when she was younger, had forced her to learn some Russian. The words were very shaky but clear. The soldier looked at her. "Do not be afraid," he said. And with those four words, she felt like she could breathe. They were safe. The soldiers welcomed them, motioning for the other Armenians to follow. This time, she was walking with soldiers, not as a prisoner, not as a slave, but as a survivor on the road to something new. Russia, it turned out, was a wonderful place to live. After so many months of terror and starvation and grief, Aurora felt her body begin to relax. The Russian soldiers had brought her and others to this bustling town filled with other Armenian survivors. There was orphans and widows and girls just like her. There, she met a professor. He was a kind man who had made it his mission to care for the broken, and he'd opened a small operation. He collected women and children rescued from slavery and forced marriages. He didn't have any money, but he had a purpose. Aurora offered to help. He handed her a bundle of pencils and stacks of paper. "Write their names, write their towns, and write their stories. It'll help you remember who they are." And so that is what she did. Many of the women had been through so much trauma, they couldn't even remember their own names. But when that happened, Aurora would give them new names. She made sure they were strong names, names with meaning. Day by day, she listened and she wrote. She became something more than a survivor. She became a healer. She wrote their stories and she promised she would make sure the world heard what had happened to them. She would find a way to be the voice for her people. Even with her own wounds still raw, Aurora chose to lift and help others. Then one day, she received a letter. It was from her uncle. She held the paper in trembling hands and read it over and over and over again. It seemed too unreal to be true. She was going to America. American missionaries had arranged for her travel to New York. The paperwork was completed. Her passageway was already secured. All she had to do was pack. An Armenian man, who had once actually been a commander in the Ottoman Empire before the genocide, came to see her. He stood tall, and his voice was very steady. He looked directly at her. "You must go to America," he said. "You have to tell them. Tell the world what happened to us. You, Aurora, you are our witness." Aurora nobbed. It was her new mission. Whatever happened, she would tell the world. It was 1917. 2 years had passed since her life had been shattered. Now, with a soul burning with purpose, Aurora stepped into a path that would take her across the ocean. She was ready to speak. Before that terrible day when the men and the boys were ordered to leave their homes, before the marches, the camps, and the massacre, there was 2.4 million Armenians living within the borders of the Ottoman Empire. 2 years later, as Aurora prepared to leave for America, only 400,000 were still alive. From 2.4 million to 400,000. That was in 1917. Today, approximately 3.8 million Armenians reside inside the Republic of Armenia. Worldwide, the Armenians number around 8 million. But in Armenia, they're only now, after 100 years, at approximately the numbers they were before the genocide in the Republic of Armenia. That is what a genocide looks like. It took a century for the Armenian people to recover their population numbers to what they had been before those two dark years of death, starvation, and enslavement. 100 years to rebuild what was nearly destroyed in just 2 years. In our next and final chapter, we're going to follow Aurora to America. There, as a refugee and still a teenager, she takes on the burden of becoming a witness for an entire nation, an entire people group. She will speak with audiences, meet with world leaders, and plead for anyone to listen. And she will relive her trauma again and again and again. And also be taken advantage of again. And the question is, was anyone going to listen? Join us next week as we conclude the story of Aurora and the Armenian Genocide. I'm Laura Lee Siemens, and this is the Church History Podcast.
If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app so you don't miss an episode. We release new content every Monday. And don't forget to check out our website at lauraleesiemens.com for more information and additional resources. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week as we continue our journey through the incredible history of the Church.